Hi, I'm Lonnie Hotch. I'm with the Jukkaquan Heritage Center in Klukwan, Alaska. I'm working with the Chilkat Indian Village tribe there. I just want to talk a little bit about our project. It was to install the Whale House collection. And let's see. Slideshow, here we go. Well, we didn't get our building finished in order to install the Whale House collection, so we had to ask for an extension. So instead of really talking about the project to install, I'm going to tell you a little bit about our journey that we had this last year, getting to the point where we can install our project. So the name of our project was Chilkat's Taking Action, Whale House Collection Installation. Here are the two buildings for our Jukkaquan Heritage Center. In case you don't know, Jukkat is the Tlingit name for Chilkat, and it's the river that runs right in front of our village, and that word means winter storage container for salmon. And Kwan is the word that refers to the people from a geographic area. So we're the people from Chilkat, and this is our Heritage Center. This building on the left is our hospitality house. We built that in 2009 and opened in 2010. That in Tlingit, Tlakudzi Kaiwatin Hiti. We shortened it to hospitality house in English. And that just has a little gift shop in it and public restrooms, and it has a dining area. And we opened that to help bridge the gap to getting our Heritage Center in place so we could start doing tours at our village site. And we have a traditional knowledge camp that we do tours at. And this The building on the right there is our Heritage Center building, which is, at this point, is just a shell. We got the funds from the Alaska State to build the exterior, and we've been working on getting the funding to finish off the interior, and we're just about there, and we are going to start next month with finishing off the construction of the interior. So next, one key thing that happened in the last year, well, in April of this year, we found out that our BIA roads money or the tribal transportation funds could be used for a visitor facility. And we had been saving up money for like 10 years to build this whole trail system that would complement our Heritage Center when it was in place. And so instead of using that money for a trail system, we put that into the building. It was like $1.1 million, and it helped. I was just ecstatic when I found that out, because I'd been trying to fill this middle funding gap for months and months and was just running into walls everywhere, and nobody had any money. And so that was really the breakthrough. And so that's why I put this. We're right in the heart of the Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve, and our intention all along was to accommodate the guests who come to, the visitors who come to our area to see the bald eagles. So it just fit right in perfectly. Here's some of the funding sources that we had initially or up to this point, and here's some other pending funding sources to finish off the project. We have four major exhibits planned for our grand opening, which will happen in May 2016. Our target date is the 14th of May. We have a Chilkat cultural landscape map. Our ancestral lands went from Stonehouse Creek, which is way up in the top of this screen, down to Berners Bay, which is just outside of Juneau, and went from mountaintop to mountaintop on both sides. The ancestors used to say the mountaintops were our fence posts. Another thing that Klukwan is well known for is Chilkat weaving, and so we're going to have an exhibit on Chilkat weaving, and the picture on the right is my great-grandmother, Mary Willard, and I'm on the bottom left wearing my robe, and there's some other pieces that I've worked on, and my grandmother, Jenny Warren, in the middle with a little blanket little killer whale blanket she made for a friend of hers, and that's being stored in a neighboring museum, and that will come back to our Heritage Center when it's opened. Another focus of our Heritage Center is our subsistence lifestyle. We went through this community process where and I think that was through IMLS, the collections development planning, and I facilitated those workshops, and we asked the community if we wanted to teach somebody about Klukwan, what are the things that we should teach them? And that's how we came up with the map idea and the, you know, Chilkat weaving, and then this idea, the subsistence, because we're all about subsistence in Klukwan, and you can see in the pictures, and it's going to be kind of divided up by season. Like in the springtime, we harvest seaweed off the beaches. We fish for hooligan, which are these little fish in the middle. They're only about like this big, and we dry it, and we also make hooligan oil. Salmon, we're all about salmon, fishing for salmon all summer long. And in the fall, we do a moose harvest camp. And I didn't have room for everything, but in the winter, there's winter fishing, and we prepare a special kind of fish we call winter fish, and that's just another salmon, late-run salmon, and then berries also in the fall, and there's a few pictures of berries up there. So that's an important part of who we are as Native people, putting up all that food, and it's something that I enjoy so much myself. And then this is the main focus of the grant that we got, was to install this whale house collection. It's pretty famous collection, and you can hardly open a book on Flinguettes or on Northwest Coast style art without finding that photo in the center of the whale house collection. It's a winter and pond photo taken in the, I believe, the 1870s. And here's some more recent photos on the left and right of the totems. There's actually four totems that are going to be installed. And we are going to be working with some museum professionals. Bob Banghart at the Alaska State Museum helped us to write our grant and get the details of what needed to be done to install the exhibit. And there are special mounts that will have to be made, and they are special requirements for mounting it so it doesn't damage the artifacts in any way. So we are working with museum professionals, and also Sarah Asper-Smith, who has her own business. She's a museum professional, and she has her own business, Exhibit Alaska, and she's working with us to help us on labeling and creating interpretive panels and stuff. So that's our project in a nutshell. And our grand opening, and this is the architect's rendition of what the main lobby area will look like when it's finished. So he's kind of cut and pasted some things into the building there, so make it look more realistic. And that's a gift shop in those boarded slats there. We'll be moving, adding another gift shop in the building. So, thank you.
I'm from the Kaw Nation, Crystal Douglas. This is a collaboration between the museum and the language department of the Kaw Nation. We have 3,400 people. About 500 of them live in the service area, the rest of them around the world. And all of them want to learn their language, which, by the way, was a dead language up until about 10 years ago. And so we created an app in order for you to learn this language on your phone. So it is set to go online the end of September. Also, while we were working on this particular thing, there was a part of it that involved the museum. We wanted to put some photos, historic photos, with the app and a little information. And so we wrote into it a virtual museum tour. Now, about 4 years ago, the museum started a theme, and it was a timeline. We created a timeline exhibit at the museum that was just a piece of another grant. And it was so popular with the tribal people and IMLS, it just turned out beautifully, that they allowed us to take it on the road. So the second grant we received, we did a timeline traveling exhibit into the service areas for the Kaw people, which was Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. And now, as a finish for this, it's going to be part of the virtual tour of the museum that will be on the website available to the public. Over the years, I've been with the tribe about 15 years. Over the years, I have amassed about 500 tribal photos. Did I do something? 500 tribal photos that I've put together. Oh, sorry, guys. Maybe I have to touch it. Basically are on my computer. People come in. I don't want to keep their originals because this is a tribe and that is passed down through their families. But I scan everything I can find. So these photos, a good portion of them will be on the virtual tour. Now, I do not have the virtual tour. It is still under construction and they wanted to have every second. It took me quite a while to get the identifications with the photos, but I do have the 50 that were originally put in to go into the app. So what we're going to do is take a look at this. This is our new chairwoman, a woman. She doesn't like chair. She likes chief, but they haven't quite finished that through the council yet. She just took over for us. We had the same chairman for 12 years, and she's been with us since October. But this is a tribal seal for the Kaw Nation, and we're going to start with language. Do you see the categories? There's 19 different categories. Unfortunately, the three at the bottom are still under construction. But we're going to start looking at, we'll start with animals. And this is Catsy. Her grandmother, great-grandmother, is the one that recorded all this for us to have. This language, the last full blood of the Kaw Nation died in 2000, Easter Sunday. In 1976, a young man that was working on his dissertation with Kansas University came and stayed with her for a year and recorded the entire language. When the last full blood died, the language died. But we had all the recordings, and we've recreated it. So we'll start with learn. How I'm hoping that you guys will be able to hear this. What they've done.
Tochoga.
Did you hear that? Okay. Then what you can do is listen to it again. Let's do one I know. I'm not real good with the language. I've tried to learn it over the years, but then I couldn't play the piano either.
Hojinga.
Hojinga. Okay. Hojinga.
Hojinga.
And then if you're not sure.
Hojinga.
Hojinga.
It gives you an opportunity to learn then. And then you've got games. The man you're seeing right here is one of our tribal. He sits on our council and he also is a lawyer. He's very handy to have around.
Ilonga Suggestion.
Honkaji.
See, you get it wrong, it tells you.
Tohnaga.
Honkaji.
Tells you, not too whoopee. But eventually Chabuka. I'm going to get it.
Honkaji.
Hongatonga. Jabe. Ita. Ube. Ube. Ita.
Honkaji.
Okay, guys.
Jabe.
Honkaji.
Ube.
Aha.
There we go. Green fingers up.
Ojinga.
Now, you've got three levels. It'll keep going like that with each category. Now, the games, is that games? Yeah. Here's quizzes. Listening. This is cute. You draw it down there and it eats it.
Wasabi.
A wasabi is a black bear. Isn't that cute?
Ilonga senja stredja.
I haven't a clue. We'll try butterfly. let's go back. It'll go all the way through the dictionary that way. Objects, the same way. Now, these are tribal people. They came down and photographed our tribal people. And then you do the same thing to record that. We already looked at that. I just wanted to show you that even plants, you've got every category. And then let's go to cultural notes. Now, this woman right here is, and that's her little baby, she's one of the original students. She and her brother are the grandchildren of Monty McCauley that recorded this, and they were our very first students. They gave them walkie-talkies. They live in a little town, tiny town, about 300 people, and they told them that they could only use them if they spoke Kaw. So they went all over town speaking things nobody could know. But she and then an elder recorded most all this for us that you're hearing. Now, this part of it, we have some songs that are family songs and songs that have come down through the tribe in the last, 50, 60 years. And so this is also available. It tells you who recorded it, and then it also, some of them give you a little more information. If they happen to be a memorial song that's for everybody, this one happens to be. Some of them are specific families, and so you'll get that information too. Video, there's a video of our very last. I've got about five more to add.
I recall.
This is our last full blood.
Going down to the store. Silas Kahn, Rufus Test, Billy Jones, Claude Pepper.
These were all full bloods.
Maybe one or two others I can recall now. But these men, I know, would be a vast repository for things that we would consider dear today to know and retain. And to keep in our minds and in our hearts about these things.
William Mahuji was also the chairman of the tribe in the 80s. Now, if you keep going on, you've got images. Now, this is some of what's going to be on the virtual tour. Let's try Alagoahu. This is Chief Alagoahu. He always was a little scary to me. This man was the chief of the Kaw when they were in Kansas. And they left Kansas in 1870, 1873, and then they were sent to Oklahoma. He went to Congress and stood before them, and he gave a speech, a very famous speech. In fact, I think it is still somewhere hanging around there. He said that you treat my people like a flock of turkeys. And you let us land, and then you run through and you shoo us up into the air, and we fly somewhere else. And then you shoo us again. He said, eventually you're going to push us over the mountains, and we're going to end up in the ocean. And then they ended up in Oklahoma, and that was their last stop. People. All this will be on the virtual tour, too, but this is a taste of it. Well, that's the same person when you know it. You know, it'd probably be better if I'd have brought up my glasses, right? These were all taken, a lot of these were taken in the 60s and the 70s, 1860s and 1870s. Now, I've got some from early on. These were the 1776 to 18. I guess will that turn if I turn this? Sorry. Doesn't want to play well with others. But this is what's going to be on the virtual tour along with the traveling exhibit. Audio. I did that. That was something else. Okay, now we've got search. Now, there are 500 words so far listed on here. And I'm gonna pick antelope. Tochoga. And hold on, I'll quit talking.
Tochoga.
And then you can go and just put in, say... Oh, yeah, it'll tell you. The woman that is speaking is the one that was holding the baby. Anyway, there's a lot more we'd like to put on it. It's available for us just to add and add and add and add. But that's pretty much it.
I'm Chuck Smythe from Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, talking about our project this year. There it goes. Okay, the tribe that we work under is Sea Alaska Corporation. For those of you who aren't familiar with Native corporations in Alaska, Sea Alaska Corporation was created by Congress to implement the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971. And to hold title to a portion of the Aboriginal land base of the Tlingit Haida and Tsimshian. It is a federally recognized tribe for special statutory purposes in more than 100 legislative acts. Sea Alaska created the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute in 1980 to implement its cultural and educational responsibilities. The elders at the time spoke about the need to pass on the blanket of their heritage into the hands of the corporation, and the corporation in doing that, accepting that responsibility, created Sea Alaska Heritage. It's a regional Native nonprofit organization conceived by clan leaders, traditional scholars, and elders at the first Sea Alaska Elders Conference. Its mission is to perpetuate and enhance Tlingit Haida and Tsimshian cultures, and a goal to promote cultural diversity and cross-cultural understanding. And it serves Tlingit Haida and Tsimshian people residing in 21 villages and communities throughout Southeast Alaska, the 21,000 Sea Alaska shareholders in Alaska and the lower 48, 70,000 residents in Southeast Alaska, and about 1 million tourists who come to Juneau every summer, as well as through cooperative agreements with the Juneau School District and University of Alaska Southeast. We work closely with those organizations and their students and teachers. And we also host scholars and researchers from around the world. The IMLS planning grant was for the grand opening exhibit in our new Walter Soboloff building, which opened May 15th. The participants in the project were Rosita Wuerl, who's Tlingit from the Thunderbird clan from Klukwan, and she's well known. She's the president of Sea Alaska Heritage, served for many years as vice chair of Sea Alaska Corporation. So those of you may know of her nationally. She was one of the founding board members of NMAI and was the NAGPRA Review Committee chair for two and a half terms, I think, and many other activities. She's also done a lot of research throughout the Arctic and Southeast. And myself, I'm the director of the Culture and History Department, have worked in Southeast over 25 years, research and report writing. And also we were advised by our Council of Traditional Scholars, which advises SHI on numerous topics. Members include clan leaders, tribal scholars, and knowledgeable elders. They formulated the traditional cultural values, which framed our exhibit, and they provided guidance on key questions for the exhibit, such as what should people be told about Clan Atu for exhibits, and how can we educate the public about the Tlingit belief that everything has a spirit. We also worked with consultants. The Alchemy of Design is a firm out of Portland who most of their experience is more in natural science, geology, paleontology, physical science, and ecosystems. But they had a exhibit designer, a graphic designer, a writer, and an illustrator, all of whom helped us in the designing and eventually in the installation. One of the first things that came up out of our startup meeting with them last August was kind of thinking of what would make a good framework for the exhibit rather than just delving into clan objects that are spiritual, that are full of meaning and key items in the culture, but how to frame that in a native perspective. And so we came up with the idea of using four core cultural values that were developed and guide the corporation and Sea Alaska Heritage. And they became kind of the foundation, the framework for the presentation in the exhibits. So we revised the concept statement to say that we will introduce the four core cultural values of the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian peoples and how they continue to shape the lives of these three cultural groups. And the title of the exhibit was Enter the World of the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian peoples. The exhibit will also feature the display of highly valued clan possessions that are integral to traditional ceremonies. The objects are known as Atu, that which was paid for usually with the life of a clan ancestor. Clan Atu include regalia, ceremonial objects, crest designs, geographic sites, spirits, names, stories, songs, halibut banks, springs, just the whole natural world. And they are worn or richly presented during a kui, which is a memorial ceremony that's the last of a series of ceremonies performed after the death of an individual. Atu refer to the history of the clan and the past events by which they are claimed as clan property, as well as they embody the spirits of clan members down through the generations that have held onto the objects and passed them on. So the exhibit presents Atu belonging to clans and describes their central significance to clan ceremonial life and identity. So the initial concept design you'll see started with looking at the four values panels. On the left was the initial design. On the right, is that right? Yeah, on the right is a final presentation of how it ended up. You can see we wrote a lot in the beginning and spent a lot of time writing and ended up having to cut about half of what we wrote. The other thing is, I don't know if you can make out the outline of, on the far right, there's a shape that's kind of like this that comes down, and that's a shape of a copper or a tana. And that is a significant shape because those items are clan Atu and are symbols of wealth and status in the culture. The concept design initially shows numerous cases and the four core values panels arranged arranged around a curved wall graphic, which was going to be the introduction to the exhibit. And then on the right, you'll see what we ended up with. Looking at the other side, we reduced the number of objects. We do have the four core cultural values, but they're put in the corners. And then we added a diorama to really present the Kuyi in a more meaningful way to talk about that central religious ceremony. So this is how it turned out. This is the introductory wall mural. You can see the shape again of the Tana in the description of the four core cultural values. And on the left is a picture of the Council of Traditional Scholars meeting on with us. So these are an example of one of the values panels. They're used to present cultural practices, concepts, and beliefs, such as spirituality, in the context of these values. We use traditional materials like red and yellow cedar that's used in making clan houses, canoes, and many other technological items. The panel is in the shape of a tana, as I said. It's double-sided, and there's one placed in each corner. These are permanent exhibit components, and we may remove them for temporary storage purposes, but bring them back. So they're going to be, you know, permanent components of future exhibits. And we're going to add interactive panels on iPads to provide, you know, one of the things we've learned is that people are asking, you know, where's the interactive element? Where's the iPad? Where's the video? Where's the sound? Exhibit cases displayed a number of different kinds of objects, some reflecting the core cultural values like this. Of Tlingit armor showing a warrior depicting Tlatsin, which is the strength of mind, body, and spirit. Some display clan hats and other ceremonial objects loaned by clans and individuals. One of the innovative things in this exhibit was we had clans loaning us things, which was very new. Usually these items are only used in ceremonies and only brought out during memorials and for presentation and display, and because they're regarded as holding the spirits, their spirits in them. And but the clans who did lend them to us decided that it's important to not educate just the non-native population, but their own people. And that's one of the reasons they wanted to lend them to us, is that, for example, there's one you'll see later, a spirit dog hat that where many of the members of that clan no longer reside in the village, and that clan for many years said that that item could not leave the village, but they decided to lend it to us and display it in Juneau because now there are more members of that clan who live in Juneau than in the village of Huna. This is the very hat we're speaking of. The interesting thing about this is that we learned something about labeling. You can see on the bottom left the label, and it has the artist named below it. Well, I took the clan spokesman up there after we had it on display, and what do you think of this, and how does it look, and how does the label look? And he said, well, it looks good, except we don't talk about the artist. So we learned that, you know, unlike Western museums where you acknowledge the artist for every item, clans, you know, when they commission these items, they purchase them, they commission. The practice is to actually pay for somebody from the opposite moiety to carve the object for that clan. And so they regard it as their property once that's done. They've paid for it and it's theirs. So they don't continue to acknowledge the artist once that happens. So we kind of learn that. So the diorama was a major innovation showing Clan At'u in practice. We have the members of mannequins representing the raven moiety facing forward, and looking towards them are members of the eagle moiety, the other side, the opposites, and that represents the value of balance, wuch yach, and reciprocity that's a hallmark of these ceremonies. So I could tell you some of the lessons learned, but I guess we're running out of time. That's on the right is a copper there, showing you that. Lessons learned, we can talk about that, I guess. Okay, we learned that the consultants had strengths in technical aspects of exhibit design and fabrication, but was not grounded in the culture. We had to do a lot of extra work in that regard, so that's something to bear in mind when you're looking for a consultant. We found there was great value in using traditional concepts, colors, materials, and shapes, and there was a lot more work in planning and designing which had to be completed before we could finalize the design and begin installation. Everybody who's done the exhibit knows this, but we were learning it the hard way by doing it. Writing of text, selecting images from many different kinds of sources, identifying objects, working with clans and individuals, and proofreading to make sure they had the correct Tlingit orthography in the language. That took a lot of time to do that. Just things, lots of writing, as I mentioned. We've had a lot of good visitors. We've had 4,600, close approaching 5,000 visitors this summer. Total sales approaching $40,000, which is really good for us because this is our first year. We were kind of nervous about how that would work because we're looking for this exhibit to help us with our operational expenses in the summer. Juneau gets about a million tourists a year. But during the school year, we're going to have it open free for school groups and clan events and things like that. So it's not just the summer kind of exhibit. So thank you.
Hi, I'm Jennifer. I'm the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer and Museum Lackey for the Aroostook Band of Mi'kmaqs. I say museum lackey, I'll get into that in just a second. So we have a small museum, very, very small. What started off, the Aroostook Band of Mi'kmaqs is in northern Maine. We are in Aroostook County. We do not have a reservation land base. We have what's called a service area. And our service area is the top third of Maine. Now, what started off about 20 years ago, or I should say 15 years ago, as our community building, it was supposed to be our museum / community building. And it very quickly took over as our administration building, leaving us with a small open storage area for our museum items. We do give school tours. There is no climate control at all. And we have a 100% organic collection that's on display. So now that you know what we are, I have to thank IMLS. I keep telling Sandra, thank you, you have no idea, but I haven't been in contact with her for a while, so this is all gonna be new to her too. So what happened? Because someone has to be the cautionary tale for these grants, so that's us. So you're welcome. I can't even make that up. One of the things that we discovered is I stepped into this grant after it had been written and after it had been awarded. You all have been there. You all know what that's like. The grant is for 1 year. And what I found, and I have to get all my notes out, is that it was a kitchen sink grant. Some of the comments that we got back were phenomenal because they were so bad. And it's okay, I have a thick skin, I can take criticism, it's not a big deal. So what I found is that in this original grant, which was named Honoring Our Traditional Families, is that we had a couple of deliverables. Underline a couple. Past perfect, we were to obtain it, catalog objects and create a database. None had ever been done before. With this grant, we were supposed to create a new website. With the same grant, we were supposed to bring the museum up to 21st century standards. I'm not done. With the same pot of money, we were supposed to initiate preservation and conservation of all of our ash splint basket collection. With the same money, we were supposed to formalize our museum infrastructure and governance. With the same money, we were also supposed to create a three-part exhibit that we were supposed to display over a 12-month period, outlining 9 traditional basket-making families. And with the same money, we were supposed to hire a part-time curator. Aren't you all glad you work where you work now? Seriously. Okay, so what did we do? Where are we with this? And we have a lot of successes and we have a lot of challenges. And I'm very upfront about that. Okay, so what did we do? Through conversations with IMLS, and I have to thank the IMLS staff for taking my ridiculous phone calls and emails and going, oh my God, what do I do now? We reduced the grant to a manageable size and scope. So if I have anybody who reviewed this grant out here, thank you for your comments. I really do mean that. We are working toward stabilizing the collection, creating an object database. We did conduct a conservator assessment, and we're establishing museum policies. That little bit from all of that. But that's what we didn't have. One of the things is that we wanted to do a three-part exhibit, but we have no loan policies. We had no museum policies whatsoever. And we didn't even know what was in our collection. So it was really putting the cart before the horse. We've had many challenges with this. We've taken three steps forward and two steps backward. Our biggest three challenges are that there's nothing in place to promote confidence in us as a museum for others. Meaning, because I am the THIPPO, I contract with an archaeologist. He has been doing some work for the last 3 years on a farm privately owned in Ashland, Maine. They have uncovered the best series of objects that date back thousands of years that we can claim as Mi'kmaq. It is awesome, and he will not recommend them to come to us as a tribe. And why? Because we have nothing in place to his satisfaction, and he says, I don't know that they're not going to end up in somebody's living room somewhere. And he's got a point. MAGPRA. Yeah, well, MAGPRA, but the thing is that he's talking about museum policies. We had no collection storage. We had nothing that I could actually look him in the eye and say, yeah, we can take this and it'll be safe. And he wouldn't do that. So he and I have a lot of conversations about this because I don't agree with him ever. So what have we done? What are our accomplishments with all of this so far? Number one, council finally recognizes the importance of supporting the museum and has actually put this grant officially under the Historic Preservation Office. That's a huge win for us. Finally, they connect it. Two, Past Perfect has been established and the database has been begun. That's another big one. What do we have? We don't know. Three, the conservator came, bless his heart, and he did an assessment and report that actually lays out logical gasp steps to actually create the infrastructure that we need. Therefore, the basket collection has been assessed and cataloged. Believe it or not, we had nothing. We have an open storage. While he was there, our other big win is that we were finally awarded a collection storage room. It's a closet, but I'll take what I can get right now. That is a huge deal. Window tinting. Our infrastructure is really, really poor. The building is getting on in years, and one of the things that you need to understand about our collection is it is right in the lobby. That's our museum area. So every time the door opens up, and I don't know how many of you have been to Northern Maine in January and February, but 30 to 50 below is a common thing. So every time you open the door, our collection is subject to massive fluctuations of heat, cold, humidity, and pests. Not that any pests are alive in January, except if they're walking on two legs. So we decided that part of our collections procedure would be to stabilize that, create microclimates. We're working toward that. And also window tinting, because we have really big windows in our lovely lobby. The thing that we found out with our window tinting is when they went up to tint them, they found spaces between the windows and the casements that were that wide, that you could actually stick your arm through. And because the windows were so high, nobody ever saw what was going on. which is also directly related to the open storage problem that we have. So this grant has actually helped us quite a bit. And we have used the IMLS funds to leverage money for preservation of oral history. We obtained another grant because of the funds and because of what we're doing to stabilize our collections and actually go forward with this. We're now creating a repository of veteran stories and photos through the Maine Historic or Maine Humanities Council and the National Park Service. It sounds small, but we've also stopped the outgoing loans. We have no loan policy, but here we go, willy-nilly, you want a basket? Okay, take it. Okay, that stopped. It did take me going into the chief's office and sitting down and yelling at him, but that's okay. We stopped non-museum staff from opening the cases and handling objects when people came in on tours. Oh, you want to see that quill basket that we only have one of? Sure, let me take it out of the case and handle it with my bare hands. And we're establishing policies. We're creating a plan to utilize other tribal areas for exhibit displays as well to help with creating microclimates in and spreading out the collection so it's not all in one room, in one area, getting constant fluctuations of all of the environmental controls that we have no control over. So, surprise, we've been very busy with the limited amount of time that we have, and as Sandra also knows, we will be asking for an extension on this particular grant as well. That's it.